I'll read both.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Reading this morning from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 13, the Lord's dancing at Rath Yatra. And this morning's topic is very esoteric. These are verses quoted by Mahaprabhu during the kirtan, where he's in the mood of Srimati Radharani and expressing it. So we'll find out if this one was read yesterday. My dear Krishna, formerly when you were staying in Mathura, you sent Uddhava to teach me speculative knowledge and mystic yoga. Now you yourself are speaking the same thing, but my mind doesn't accept it. There is no place in my mind for Gyan Yoga or Dhyan Yoga. Although you know me very well, you are still instructing me in Gyan Yoga and Dhyan Yoga. It is not right for you to do so. That was yesterday? Yes. Okay, then. Nice purport. So continuing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, I would like to withdraw my consciousness from you and engage it in material activities. But even though I try, I cannot do so. I am naturally inclined to you only. Your instructions for me to meditate on you are therefore simply ludicrous. In this way, you're killing me. It is not very good for you to think of me as a candidate for your instructions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, this is the famous Anyabhilasha Trishunyam Jnana Karma Adyanavritam Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama. For a pure devotee, there is no scope for indulging in mystic yoga practice or the cultivation of speculative knowledge. It is indeed impossible for a pure devotee to engage his mind in such unwanted activities. Even if a pure devotee wanted to, his mind would not allow him to do so. That is the characteristic of a pure devotee. He is transcendental to all fruitive activity, speculative knowledge, and mystic yoga meditation. The gopis therefore express themselves as follows. Quote, this is the next text, text 141. The gopis are not like the mystic yogis. They will not be satisfied simply by meditating on your lotus feet and imitating the so-called yogis. Teaching the gopis about meditation is another kind of duplicity. When they are instructed to undergo mystic yoga practice, they are not at all satisfied. On the contrary, they become more and more angry with you. Unquote. That's the verse. Purport. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has stated Chaitanya Chandramrita number 5. This is another famous one. Kaivalyam Narakayate Tridashapur Akashapushpayate, etc. For the pure devotee who has realized Krishna consciousness through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the monistic system by which one becomes one with the Supreme appears hellish. The mystic yoga practice by which the mind is controlled and the senses are subjugated also appears ludicrous to a pure devotee. The devotee's mind and senses are already engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. In this way, the poisonous effects of sensory activities are removed. If one's mind is always engaged in the service of the Lord, there is no possibility that one will think, feel, or act materially. Similarly, the fruit of workers' attempt to attain to the heavenly planets is nothing more than akasha pushpa. Pushpa means flowers. And akash, sky, flowers in the sky. A fruitive worker's attempt to attain the heavenly planets is nothing more than a phantasmagoria to the devotee. After all, the heavenly planets are material, and in due course of time, they will all be dissolved. The devotees don't care for such temporary things. They engage in transcendental devotional activities because they desire elevation to the spiritual world, where they can live eternally and peacefully and with full knowledge of Krishna. In Vrindavan, the gopis, cowherd boys, and even the calves, cows, trees, and water are fully conscious of Krishna. They are never satisfied with anything but Krishna. Quick, I don't know how this is done, if you have to wait to the end or comment as you go along, or speaker's choice, I guess. There's commentary by Jiva Goswami on the Damodar Leela, where his comments are based upon the fact that everything in relation to Krishna, all of this Goloka and Gokula are fully conscious. So he gives the explanation that when Mother Jasoda was breastfeeding Krishna, and then the milk started to boil over, so she was in this dilemma of what to do. Should I continue feeding Krishna because that's what he wants, or should I go and rescue the milk that's going to boil over because that's also for Krishna? That milk is for making nice, sweet preparations for Krishna, sandesh and so many nice things. So Jiva Goswami comments, some people think that the milk was boiling over because it was on the stove too long, but that's not why the milk was boiling over. The milk was boiling over because the milk was thinking, alas, what is the use of my life? Mother Jasoda has such affection for Krishna that she could go on feeding Krishna eternally, and Krishna will never become satiated with receiving the feeding, direct breastfeeding of Mother Jasoda. What is the use of my life? Better I just give up my life and jump out of this pot and enter into the fire. Jiva Goswami. So then Mother Jasoda, feeling the dilemma, she calls upon her rational faculty and decides, I can put Krishna down and come back and feed Krishna later, but if the milk boils over, that part of serving Krishna will be spoiled, so I should go serve, rescue the milk. So she runs over to the stove. and sprinkles water on the surface of the milk. Those that are in the kitchen and you see something boiling over, what do? You can try to remove the pot, but even quicker is you sprinkle water and it brings the boil down very quickly. So Jiva Goswami says, some people think it's because Mother Jasoda sprinkled water over the pot of milk and that's why it ceased boiling over. But that's not the fact. The fact is the milk was thinking, oh, now what am I doing? Mother Jasoda is such a pure devotee and now she's in distress because I'm boiling over. Better I just settle down and sit nicely inside this pot rather than giving her trouble. Then again, Jiva Goswami's comment is when Mother Jasoda is chasing after Krishna, she goes with the stick into the storeroom and she sees Krishna standing on top of the utkal, the grinding mortar, and he's taking and feeding the monkeys. So she comes rushing towards Krishna, and Krishna sees Mother Jasoda coming. He jumps off the grinding mortar and starts running. And Mother Jasoda is running after him. And as she's running, some flowers are falling from her hair. Jiva Goswami's comment is, some people think that the flowers were falling from Mother Jasoda's hair because her hair was moving. That is not the fact. The fact is the flowers were thinking, Mother Jasoda is being slowed down by my adding weight to her hair. Better I jump off so she can catch Krishna. And there were another group of flowers that were thinking, oh, how glorious is Mother Jasoda. Let me fall at her feet and have her feet touch me, and then I'll be blessed by the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee. In this way, the flowers were falling from Mother Yasoda's hair. And it's not that, oh, well, that's Goloka Vrindavan, but here it's just matter. And flowers aren't conscious and milk isn't conscious because it's just matter. But when Krishna comes, he comes in his whole transcendental abode. And his whole transcendental abode is participating with him in conscious service, just as Prabhupada is saying right in the purport here. Not only the gopis, not only the cowherd boys, but all the features of Vrindavan, not even what we would normally consider to be the living entities, like the trees, but even the water and the rocks. It's quite inconceivable from our present experience, but Krishna's abode is fully conscious. Where Krishna is present, it's Sat, Chit, and Ananda. It's the spiritual world. So, all the residents in Vrindavan reflect this mood of the gopis, which is, in their case, simply most intense. But they all share the same mood. They're never satisfied with anything but Krishna. They can't but think of Krishna. One nice little example of this is when Lord Kapila Dev is explaining devotional service to Devahuti. And Devahuti asks the question, is it possible for devotional service to be mixed with the modes of nature? Because devotional service is pure. And the modes of nature are apart from the spiritual realm. Can there be a mixture? And his answer is yes. Devotional service is pure, but one's consciousness may be influenced by the mode of ignorance. And then he describes devotional service in the mode of ignorance and devotional service in the mode of passion, devotional service in the mode of goodness. I'll just repeat what he says. Devotional service in goodness is where there is, one is engaging in devotional service with the purpose that it should be done. Or, I want my existence to become purified and therefore I'm taking up this devotional service in goodness, out of duty or seeking purity. But devotional service in transcendence, he gives the example, just like the waters of a river during rainy season, they're rushing downstream. Nothing can stop it from rushing downstream, just like in the spontaneous platform of pure devotional service, when there are topics of Krishna, one doesn't have to bring one's mind to those topics. The mind immediately goes. You cannot check the mind from going when there is topics about the personality of Godhead. And we have so many wonderful examples of that in our scriptures. Right in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Mukunda, the physician, saw the peacock fan shading the king, just seeing the peacock fan, his mind went to Krishna and he fell on the ground unconscious. So many nice examples. Pundarik Vidyaniti, just hearing Mukunda sing a verse from the Bhagavatam, his mind went. Even the social circumstance was not appropriate. Appropriate, inappropriate, didn't matter. His mind just went. Mukunda kept singing, and his mind was completely absorbed in Krishna. Srivas Pandit, when he was hearing, even Devananda Pandit speaking Bhagavatam, and he wasn't even a realized person. He was a speculator, but just hearing. He lost external consciousness right in the assembly, just hearing the wonderful descriptions of Krishna. And so on. Uddhava, when he was asked by Vidura, how is my Lord Krishna? You have been with him in Dwaraka. Can you give me word of how is Krishna? And it ends up in three chapters. That one question. And the first answer, he's choking. He can't speak. He's in such ecstasy just thinking of Krishna. And that's where that verse, what master can be that compares to Krishna? When Putana approached him to kill him, but because there was some affection of motherly love towards Krishna, he overlooked her heinous purpose and liberated her and gave her position in the spiritual world as an eternal associate assisting Mother Jasoda in parental affection. Can you find a master better than that? And you want to know about Krishna. So he begins speaking. Krishna in Vrindavan. Krishna outside of Vrindavan. Krishna here. Krishna there. Just spontaneously. So that's what we're hearing these verses. The nature of spontaneous devotion of the gopis in Vrindavan exhibited by Mahaprabhu. Next verse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. The quote, the gopis have fallen into the great ocean of separation and are being devoured by the Timingala fish in their ambition to serve you. The gopis are to be delivered from the mouths of these Timingala fish, for they are pure devotees. Since they have no material conception of life, why should they aspire for liberation? The gopis do not want liberation desired by yogis and gyanis, for they are already liberated from the ocean of material existence. Purport. The bodily conception is created by the desire for material enjoyment. This is called vipad smriti. which is the opposite of real life. The living entity is eternally the servant of Krishna. But when he desires to enjoy the material world, he cannot progress in spiritual life. One can never be happy by advancing materially. This is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5:30. Adanta gobir vishatam tamishram punash punak charvata charvananam. Through the uncontrolled senses, one may advance one's hellish condition. He may continue to chew the chewed, that is, repeatedly accept birth and death. The conditioned souls use the duration of life between birth and death only to engage in some hackneyed activity, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In the lower animal species, we find the same activities. Since these activities are repeated, engaging in them is like chewing that which has already been chewed. If one can give up his ambition to engage in hackneyed material life and take to Krishna consciousness instead, he will be liberated from the stringent laws of material nature. One does not need to make a separate attempt to become liberated. If one simply engages in the service of the Lord, he will be liberated automatically, as Srila Bilvamangala Thakur therefore says, Mukti Svayam Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman, or liberation stands before me with folded hands, begging to serve me. There's some more of these verses and we'll come back. Lord Chaitanya continued, it is amazing that if you have forgotten the land of Vrindavan, and how is it that you have forgotten your father, your mother, your friends? How have you forgotten Govardhan Hill, the banks of the Jamuna, and the forest where you enjoyed the Rasalila dance? Krishna, you are certainly a refined gentleman. With all good qualities, you are well-behaved, soft-hearted, and merciful. I know that there is not even a tinge of fault to be found in you. Yet your mind does not even remember the inhabitants of Vrindavan. This is only my misfortune and nothing else. I do not care for my personal unhappiness. But when I see the morose face of your mother, Jasoda, and the hearts of all the inhabitants of Vrindavan breaking because of you, I wonder whether you want to kill them all. Or do you want to enliven them by coming there? Why are you simply keeping them alive in a state of suffering? The inhabitants of Vrindavan do not want you dressed like a prince, nor do they want you to associate with great warriors in a different country. They cannot leave the land of Vrindavan, and without your presence, they are all dying. What is their condition to be? My dear Krishna, you are the life and soul of Vrindavan Dham. You are especially the life of Nanda Maharaj. You are the only opulence in the land of Vrindavan, and you are very merciful. Please come and let all the residents of Vrindavan live kindly. Keep your lotus feet again in Vrindavan. Purport. Srimati Radharani did not express her personal unhappiness at being separated from Krishna. She wanted to evoke Krishna's feelings for the condition of all the others in Vrindavan Dham. Mother Jasoda, Maharaj Nanda, the Gaur boys, the gopis, the birds, the bees on the banks of the river Jamuna, the water of the Jamuna, the trees, the forests, and all other paraphernalia associated with Krishna before he left Vrindavan for Mathura. These feelings of Srimati Radharani were manifested by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore he invited Lord Jagannath, Krishna, to return to Vrindavan. That is the purport of the Rath Yatra cars going from Jagannath Puri to the Gundicha temple. Very profound. When we're pulling Lord Jagannath's cart, it's a nice festival. Kirtan is very nice. People are getting to hear the holy name. People are getting to see Jagannath's beautiful form. And all those wonderful things. Receive prasadam, a nice festival in the park. Lots and lots of devotees. The atmosphere is very joyful. Powerful event. But Chaitanya Charitamrita, by the mercy of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, wants us to understand more deeply Mahaprabhu's mood. Exactly the mood of Srimati Radharani, bringing Krishna to Vrindavan, or striving to get Krishna once again to place his lotus feet in Vrindavan, not in the opulent, majestic mood of Purushottama Jagannath, but in the simple village mood of Krishna in Vrindavan. So this other talk about not being interested in Gyan Yoga and Dhyan Yoga and the fruits of them, heavenly physician through properly performed fruitive activities or liberation. For those who are on the practicing path of devotion, we need the proper discrimination between what's bhakti that's mixed with these intentions and unmixed bhakti and strive by Rupa Goswami's teachings to leave behind, to cast aside those other intentions, material intentions, gaining something from Krishna in the form of happiness in some temporary situation in this life or the next life in the realm of heaven and so on. The conception of life beyond material existence for most people, even their idea of being a perfect religionist is go to heaven and enjoy heavenly pleasures. The temporary nature of that is not clear as it is in the Vedic conception. One devotee was sharing with me just yesterday that there was some lady in the parking lot on her cell phone, a Christian lady running around yelling to whoever was on the other side, "Oh, these people, they're idol worshippers, and in the name of Jesus, we should come and save them," and so on. Now, we shouldn't be, you know, put down mentality towards persons that may not understand the message of Krishna consciousness like this lady was doing, but we should also have a clear understanding how elevated is this path that's being so easily opened for us by the Sankirtan process and these wonderful teachings if we receive them properly. Far beyond even the conception of heaven, far beyond even the conception of liberation. When liberation is standing at your door with folded hands, simply begging for the opportunity to render some service, is the purpose of bhakti then to attain liberation? To enter into that genuinely requires purification, requires the devotional service rendered in the quality of goodness for a long time. But the fruit of that devotional service in goodness for a long time is what we're hearing. It's transcendental devotional, spontaneous devotional service. It can't be checked. And the opportunity for material enjoyment is something that a devotee is in this, such a stage is simply not interested in. I'll share something. Maybe Apoorva can remember this from a lecture Prabhupada gave in Brooklyn Temple on Henry Street. Prabhupada was saying that in material life, persons are eagerly chasing after sense gratification. And their life is simply chasing after sense gratification. When one becomes a devotee, it works the other way around. Sense gratification comes and rolls at your feet. Please take me. Please take me. And Prabhupada went like this with his hand and turned his head and said, the devotee says, I am not interested. No, thank you. I simply want to serve Krishna. So the temptation of sense gratification may be there in the mind of the practicing devotee. Here's this opportunity, that facility, some object, some situation, something. When the heart is filled with the satisfaction, the happiness of devotion, there isn't anything that can compare. I want to share something a little on the personal side, but I've seen Badahari in the audience. We've done japa retreats together. Remember very well the last one we did together. So something happened. I was visiting in Sharanagati. Some of our devotees from Sharanagati are here. And this year I'm the chairman, the GBC chairman. And that's like, in one sense it's a privilege, in another sense it's like, it's an enormous weight of responsibility. There's so much of stuff that's pressing. And I was thinking, how am I going to take part in a japa retreat with all that weight of stuff? And in Sharanagati, there's no phones, there's no cell phone reception. You know, it's nice. You're kind of almost off the grid. There's running water because there's water coming off the mountains and there's water pressure. So you get water coming out of the tap. You don't have to pump. Anyway, so we were doing our 64-round day. And I was thinking, this is going to be impossible. Only if Krishna is very merciful. And it was such a nice setting with a nice lake there and mountains on this side and that side, and we're under kind of like a canopy structure. The Rath Yatra festival site, simple, but you know, open on all sides, and it's very nice. So it was 64 round day, and I was sitting down thinking, Krishna, please help me. And I was expecting this bombardment of stuff. And it was so amazing. I felt like Krishna just took all that stuff away. It's like all these mountains that were all around. And I felt like all that stuff can wait. And Krishna's allowing it just to wait. And I can just get absorbed in the holy name. And it was amazing. The whole experience was amazing experience. When there's shelter, all that, it's service. It's not like, you know, nonsense, waste of time stuff. But it can wait. And the moment is chanting the holy name, being present with Krishna and nice devotees chanting the holy name. And it just continued flowing like that the whole 64 rounds, it was, etc. So that's a little glimpse in this wonderful description of spontaneous. That's not claiming spontaneous devotional service, but the attraction of Krishna is so great for one who's through prolonged, just like the description of Shukadeva Goswami appreciating the cowherd boys. How fortunate, how many lifetimes of pious activities. This isn't, you know, Shupa karma. This is bhakti abhas, but the performance of devotional practices for lifetimes to get the opportunity to be present with Krishna. So here's Radharani in this mood that Mahaprabhu is feeling. Please come back with us once again into Vrindavan. I'm going to read a little bit what Krishna says, and then we'll end. After hearing Srimati Radharani's statements, Lord Krishna's love for the inhabitants of Vrindavan was evoked, and his body and mind became very much perturbed. After hearing of their love for him, he immediately thought himself to be always indebted to the residents of Vrindavan. Then Krishna began to pacify Srimati Radharani as follows. Quote, "My dearest Srimati Radharani, please hear me. I am speaking the truth. I cry day and night simply upon remembering all you inhabitants of Vrindavan. No one knows how unhappy this makes me." Krishna. Purport. It is said, Vrindavanam, Vrindavanam purit yajya padam ekam na gacchati. In one sense, Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha, does not even take one step away from Vrindavan. However, in order to take care of various duties, Krishna had to leave Vrindavan. He had to go to Mathura to kill Kamsa. And then he was taken by his father to Dwaraka, where he was busy with state affairs and disturbances created by demons. Krishna was away from Vrindavan, and he was not at all happy, as he plainly disclosed to Srimati Radharani. She is the dearmost life and soul of Sri Krishna, and he expressed his mind to her as follows. Sri Krishna continued, "All the inhabitants of Vrindavan Dham, my mother, my father, cowherd boyfriends, and everything else are like my life and soul. And among all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopis are my very life and soul. And among the gopis, you, Srimati Radharani, are the chief. Therefore, you are the very life of my life." Purport. Srimati Radharani is the center of all Vrindavan's activities. In Vrindavan, Krishna is the instrument of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan still chant, "Jai Radhe." From Krishna's own statement given herein, it appears that Srimati Radharani is the queen of Vrindavan and that Krishna is simply her decoration. Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, the enchanter of Cupid, but Radharani is the enchanter of Krishna. Consequently, Srimati Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini, the enchanter of the enchanter of Cupid. "My dear Srimati Radharani, I am always subservient to the loving affairs of all of you. I am under your control only. My separation from you and residence in distant places have occurred due to my strong misfortune." He's got Krishna's bad karma. "When a woman is separated from the man she loves, or a man is separated from his beloved woman, neither of them can live. It is a fact that they live only for each other, For if one dies and the other hears of it, he or she will die also. Such a loving, chaste wife and a loving husband desire all welfare for each other in separation and do not care for personal unhappiness. Desiring only each other's well-being, such a pair certainly must, again, meet without delay. You are my most dear, and I know that in my absence you cannot live for a moment. Just to keep you living, I worship Lord Narayan. By his merciful potency, I come to Vrindavan every day to enjoy pastimes with you. I then return to Dwarka Dham. Thus, you can always feel my presence there in Vrindavan. Our love affair is more powerful because of my good fortune in receiving Narayan's grace. This allows me to come there unseen by others. I hope that very soon I will be visible to everyone. This is very elevated subject matter. But Swabha says, of course, it's Mahaprabhu's mood during Rath Yatra. And although the subject matter is very elevated, it can churn our hearts to appreciate, even we're somewhere way down here, that when Jagannath's procession is there and the kirtan is resounding, that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are attracted by that lively kirtan, the enthusiasm of the devotees in kirtan. And while we may not be experiencing what he's experiencing or even meditating on what he's experiencing, it's enhancing, it's a service to enhance the happiness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. And that one day, as our Krishna consciousness advances, these very deep subject matters will also enter into our hearts. And I should end so we can take breakfast. Thank you very much. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Bol. I hope you have no questions, because I can't answer them with this subject matter.